Welcome, everyone. It's a sad occasion. We're together. I guess not too sad. We are celebrating the life and work of a great actor and playwright and author, Gene Wilder, who passed away sadly this week. We're gonna talk a little bit about some of the more influential work, either on a personal level or you know, neat little stories we've heard over the years, and share and commiserate with the rest of you. I think 2016 has been a rough year, a really rough year, and for whatever reason, the loss of Gene Wilder was one of the ones that hit me very hard. I'm Frank. I'm joined in the studio by James and Big Papa Pete. How you guys doing?
Well, you know, all things considered, not too bad.
Yeah. I remember when I found out about Gene Wilder passing. It was only a few days ago, obviously, and it was just sort of mentioned as if it was just, you know, another trending news topic, but it just shattered me for the rest of the day. That I was just completely inconsolable. I hit at a very strange time personally for me, but I would think that, and I've been thinking about it for the last few days, what I like the most about Gene Wilder's work is his work. Like, unlike some other people where, like, some actors or famous people, celebrities represent a period of time, and certainly Gene Wilder does, but it's not nostalgia, like the, oh, I remember when I used to watch this movie. It's not just that. It's also the quality of work he was in. A friend of mine, Kevin Mayer, does Kevin Geeks Out, posted when the news struck that he called Gene Wilder his favorite sensitive madman, which I think is like the perfect way of describing that style. And it's something you don't see much today. And he certainly had his own unique style that really just makes some of his works the most memorable. I don't know where to begin. I think we're going to talk about a couple of Gene Wilder's films, right? So let's talk about the most important, the most talked about and shared one first, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right?
Yeah, definitely Willy Wonka was certainly my first introduction to Gene Wilder. We watched Willy Wonka in the third grade after we read the book. And it's just, you know, getting to know the film, obviously, years and years later as I grew up with it, I think what's most fascinating about it is that story that Gene tells about why he what he had to do to agree to take the film. He spoke with the director and said that he wouldn't do the film unless when he first came out of the factory, he was limping on a cane and he would trip.
He gets caught on a brick. He somersaults forward and
he would be fine.
Graceful, right.
And then everybody would, you know, cheer. And you know, and the director's like, well, why would you do that? And he's like, well, because then throughout the rest of the movie, no one would be able to tell whether I'm lying or not. And it just, it spoke so much to, you know, something that I feel like I could tell innately early on, just like what a handle he had on the characters he played and the stories that were being presented.
Exactly. Like that's a lot of craft.
It's amazing how much of Gene was in Willy Wonka. He didn't just act that role. He was intimately involved in the shaping of that movie's version of Willy Wonka. Recently, there were some notes that came out of his him talking about ideas for the costume design.
Oh yeah, I read that too. Also from Kevin's post in my press. It was the website's letters of note, I think, and it published his notes on it.
And it was absolutely amazing. Where, you know, minute little tweaks to it. You know, well, I think this kind of fabric, this style of jean of not jean
trousers
yeah, would be better. Whether the bow tie or the hat should match his shoes,
right?
Or whether the shoes should match the bow tie or the hat, it was all so important to him to get this character right, and you see how much effort he took to it to put into it, and the result was a living, breathing character,
right? And I don't know if you can honestly say that, like, had the tie not matched his eyes, would the character be as important? But that's not really important, because that's not essential. What you said, Pete, exactly, is like he put so much of himself into it. He cared so much about the craft, about what he was doing, and that showed in the character.
He was a consummate craftsman in everything he did. I mean, when he studied acting, he studied Uta Hagen, Stanislavski, and was one of the first ones to study the method acting.
Oh, wow.
He came at acting from so many different angles, and you can see it. He delivered performances that were unlike anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think what's interesting about Willy Wonka, that's the most iconic thing that I think most people are sharing these days for whatever reason, but that seems like it's a relatively new phenomenon, in that something about the geek aesthetic has adopted Willy Wonka, or Willy Wonka was made for the modern geek aesthetic. Like, it's vibrant and weird. It's like the new weird, you know what I mean? So yeah. Somehow it's like, it's the trendy, cool thing. But for me, there's a whole list of Wilder films that were really influential and or just really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about one of my weirdly favorite films that I don't know if this group knows too much, The Frisco Kid. In The Frisco Kid, Gene Wilder plays a Hasidic Jew in the Wild West, opposite Harrison Ford as like the gruff cowboy.
Mm-hmm. Really?
It's a hilarious movie.
Isn't he supposed to be going out to be the first rabbi?
He's gonna be a rabbi
in California or something.
Yeah, exactly. There's like some like spring up town, and he's gonna be the rabbi. He comes over from Poland, and I hate to put it this way, it's like Shaolin Noon or Nights or whatever the hell those movies were. But like, it's a fish out of water story and set in the Old West. And it's hilarious exclusively because of Gene Wilder. He doesn't have that many, like, in some of the other films that are more popular, he has an ensemble cast of, like, great comedians. Yeah. And he has some to play off of in Frisco Kid. But for me, watching it with my father, and my father, again, a huge movie buff, watched all these movies with him, like, I remember my father cracking up laughing at everything Gene Wilder did. And it's interesting because, like, Gene Wilder was Jewish but wasn't raised like religious. So to prepare for this role, he actually hired rabbis that he asked questions to. Like, I assume, like, some of there's this one scene in the movie, I'll limit it to one scene, where he sees a bunch of black robed people, and he had just been mugged and robbed and what have you in the Old West. And he sees these people, and he says, "Finally, you know, my people, I can rush out to them." And he rushes out to them, and I think, like, maybe his vision's blurred or something, and he finally sees them, and they're Amish. And he's just, like, he's screaming these crazy Yiddish, like, not obscenities, but, like, they kicked me in my knees, they kicked me. Like, these weird, awkward turns of phrase and expressions. Like, he was so crazed and sympathetic in this role. And in so many of his other roles, I think that's one of my favorites. And a similar route, although I think this will be the transition to somebody else, would be See No Evil, Hear No Evil, one of his later films, one of the four films he's did with Richard Pryor, that, again, he's playing a duff guy in this one, sympathetic and crazed. Just everything he said was hilarious.
So See No Evil, Hear No Evil is an interesting film because it's a film that Gene only agreed to do if he got to rewrite the film, which actually kind of ended up coming out with giving it like a really mixed reception. It's interesting that you like it because it's not considered one of his best films yet. Still, for some reason, his performance as well as his co-stars in it all seem to have, like, you know, really shining performances in it, despite it kind of being a bit of a muddled film. It's a really neat piece.
It was kind of a shame. It's a shame he wasted four movies of his career with Richard Pryor, because I don't think they had any chemistry whatsoever.
Not at all.
I'm kidding. Yeah, yeah.
For those of you for whom it is not patently obvious.
So this is embarrassing. These are the Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder films I remember. I know Silver Streak, which is, of course, the seminal one, probably, right? It's the one where that most people could quote, like, verbatim. Then one of my favorites was See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Hit, like, I was young when it came out. It was another thing I saw with my family. Just like there's a movie called Tough Guys. That, like, it's a distinct memories of my parents cracking up. And I just, it's important. It's very interesting.
It formed your idea of what adults found funny.
And then the one that I think is the one that wasn't really well received was Another You. That was the last film he and Richard Pryor did together. And I understand that. Like, it's an aging Richard Pryor. He's sick. But again, a film he did so that he can do a film with his friend. Yeah. And, like, that's another aspect of the Gene Wilder myth. It's not only just the commitment to the craft and the quality movies. It's also, he just seemed like, and from all accounts, was this wonderful, kind, sweet man. But I can't remember the fourth film. It's one of the bigger ones. It's one of the two early ones. It's like, there's Silver Streak and... There's the one when they're in jail. What's the one when they're in jail? Oh my God, guys, Stir Crazy. That's
Stir
it.
Crazy. Right, okay.
Yes, Stir Crazy and Silver Streak were the two big ones. But for me, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, the comedy, the stupid slapstick ableism that was all over that film does it for me. But yeah, those are some of my favorites.
God, is there a single one of Gene Wilder's movies that you could make today?
I think you can. I think if you make Blazing Saddles today, it would still be like incredibly controversial and like biting satire. I think it would be controversial, but it would be.
Oh yeah, I don't think they'd make it.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory though. That didn't work out too well.
No,
although that was specifically attempting to be the anti Gene Wilder's.
I guess Charlie you would have to be. How else would you be able to do it?
I think a big one for me has always been Young Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I never knew... I knew Gene Wilder, obviously, from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but in high school, I hadn't watched a lot of Gene Wilder movies or Mel Brooks movies until my ex-girlfriend at the time, who loved Young Frankenstein, sat me down and made me watch it. It was her favorite film. And... I mean, it just got
I'm glad
me.
She's no longer your ex-girlfriend. Yeah, we all try to parse that one. Everybody on the table was like, ex-girlfriend at the time, which means...
No, just my ex-girlfriend. But that film really introduced me to kind of Mel Brooks at a time where I could go back and really explore a lot of his films and got me into both Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks and kind of what they did. And Young Frankenstein is just so funny. The entire film is just everyone in that film, but particularly Gene is kind of like the protagonist, is obviously Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Well, Young Dr. Frankenstein.
Yes.
Frankenstein.
I would say that, not to like crap on that, not at all to crap on that, but I do think he is hilarious in it, but it's ensemble cast. Like,
it is.
Because he's playing opposite some quality actors who are doing their own thing, he like elevates them, right?
So like, everybody plays off of each other incredibly well in that movie, mm-hmm. and it's laugh out loud nonstop the entire time. It's just so funny.
Right.
Yeah, I have to be in complete agreement about that, but I have such a weird history with Young Frankenstein, actually, because when I first saw that film, I was not age appropriate, so like I was watching it and I looked at it like it was
a horror movie,
like it was playing straight.
I think that was totally age appropriate.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I was like, I mean, not necessarily age appropriate. I mean, everything happened that was very PG rated.
But you didn't really understand what a Schweinstucker was.
Exactly. I watched and I thought like, oh, this is a pretty good horror film. Because I was young and I didn't know any better.
This is scary.
Frank is right. That's absolutely absolutely appropriate. I think.
Yeah.
If you go back into our archives, the non-productive archives, and look for some of the Latterdays Halloween specials. I won't go too deep into this because we've covered it, but that movie is absolutely amazing to me because it works absolutely perfectly simultaneously as a parody and a sequel to the original Universal Frankenstein.
Very true, yeah.
Right,
and it does both pitch perfectly. It's an amazing film, and Gene was such a huge part of that.
Yeah, from what I recall in the creation mythos of that film, it was one of those things where like we have the same representatives the same people represented like all like four of these actors, or I'm not sure if Mel Brooks was represented by the same group. He wasn't obviously an actor in the film, but Marty Feldman, Gene Wilder, and Peter Boyle were all represented by the same person, I believe. And they were like, we got to make a movie with these guys. And I think like at some point Gene Wilder was like just sketching notes out, and it came out with just this page of, he woke up one day with a paper that said Young Frankenstein, and he's like, yeah, all right, that'll work.
And it was just fate that that movie, so many things transpired to make that movie work. The fact that Universal was about to destroy all of the old props from the old Frankenstein movies. They were cleaning out their warehouse, and they got word of it. I think they had days notice to find out that, oh, yes, they're getting rid of it. You can have it if you want. Come and pick it up.
Jeez, that is crazy.
And so it used all the props from the original movie.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. The movie itself is phenomenal. And again, his role in it, I'm not saying that, it's not as if every role he's played, he's not the same character. Despite the fact that we say that the sensitive madman, there are elements of that in almost every character.
Oh, yeah.
But there are times where he's like the romantic lead. He has to play straight to other people. I would think Young Frankenstein is maybe 80% him playing straight, until he eventually, you know, becomes the mad scientist. And I think that's what's most interesting about him as an actor, is how he crafts each one of these individual characters.
I feel like he was one of the last, like, I know people say this a lot, but I would think he was one of the last theater actors in film, because like you watch him do it, and he's, every performance he is playing to an audience, he's projecting every emotion he has out there, and it's not like there's not, I'm not,
but not in a bad dinner theater way.
No, no, not in a bad dinner theater way. Although sometimes he is, but no, that's very intentional.
No, all right. So we were watching Blazing Saddles beforehand. We watched the scene for it, and it's a scene where he's explaining his the Cisco kid.
The Waco kid.
I almost said Cisco. I said Cisco kid because of Frisco kid. Anyways, there's going to be a lot of mistakes on this. But when the Waco kid was describing his origin and how he describes the kid who runs into him, and he's like, it's that classic, like, there's a term for it. It's like a new wave Western, like a 70s Western, when things started getting a little dark. The gunslinger's in the street, and he turns around, and it's a kid. Oh, my God, of all the things, a kid. It's just challenged me to draw, and he just gets sick, and he wants to throw his guns down and never do this again, you know?
Yeah.
But he turns around, and the kid,
the little bastard, shot me in the ass.
Right. And now it's a funny line, but it's delivered really funnily, you know? Yeah. It's just the venom. Yeah. Right? The venom of how he just shot me. Bastard. It's like, and you need a little stage acting, I think, to get that across.
He does that. He does that with that big pop of projection. Even though there's a boom mic right over his head, and you probably just blew out half the speakers. you need that pop to get that joke across, and he knew when to do that.
Yeah, and I'd have to assume that there were two boom mics, one set much finer than the other. All right, we lost the main boom, but we got the Gene boom. You know what? I'm just going to say this. He had a lovely voice.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And not just in Willy Wonka, where he does some song, he sings some songs. There's actually he was in a made-for-TV version of Alice in Wonderland, where he was, I think, like the Mock Turtle or something. He was the turtle in the turtle soup. It was just like a ridiculous...
The Mock Turtle.
Yeah, it's just such a ridiculous movie. It's got so many people in it. I don't know how they got this many people.
That was a very bizarre production.
Right? And the cast was huge and impressive. And he has this little role. He comes in and he sings his song. And it's just this sweet little sad song. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's a unique, unique star that faded too soon, even though he's been with us, thankfully, for many a decade. And we have lots of work to look back at and enjoy.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, up in the afterlife, people are rolling in the aisles now because he and Gilda are back together, and they're putting on one hell of a show. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an interesting character. So I did a little bit more research on him today, and I realized that he called himself, I mean, he is Jewish, mm-hmm. but he wasn't of the Jewish faith, or else he referred to himself as a Jewish person who is an atheist and Buddhist, whatever sticks. Like, he just didn't really have a lot of faith,
right,
in the supernatural. He just believed, like, to what was his mantra is, what was it?
The golden rule?
I think it was.
He adopted despite the fact that he described himself as a Jewish Buddhist atheist, his personal core belief was the Christian golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
And, you know, and he has a wonderful love story with Gilda. It's a very sweet thing that he apparently embraced towards the end of his life, even. But he was married.
Yeah, he remarried. He remarried, in 92, I think, a few
times. And his the last wife he was with was with her for 25 years. She saw him through his sickness. So it's just like, I don't have to put it like it's odd. His job, all he was an actor. Right?
Yeah.
All he did was he played characters and, you know, brought you a little bit of entertainment in your life. But it's amazing what kind of a lasting effect someone who, quote, merely acts or merely provides entertainment can actually provide for people. And there's so many people I've seen over the last barely a week feel touched by his passing. It's amazing. And I really do think that if you could live a life where you've left that much of a lasting effect on so many people, you've done the work of angels.
It's always sad when a life comes to its end, but it's hard to feel entirely distraught when it's the end of a life that was well lived.
Yeah.
And absolutely. From everything I can tell, Gene lived a life that was well lived, and I can only hope that he realized that. But I think he did.
Yeah, I do. I definitely think he did. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us in this immemorial post of the show. I feel weird asking people to follow at the end of the show. But yeah, follow us. Rate us.
Share your memories.
Yeah, share your memories in the comments of the post, and we will read it and weep.
And stay tuned. We'll return to funny things momentarily.
Sedative. That is my favorite line of almost all comedy. I remember the first time I heard sedative, because it comes right after like a long scene of like violence and like funny. It was funny, but like the joke, the sedative tag was for something that was said a full 30 seconds ago. So for him to like, oh, sedative, and they get it wrong, oh, sedative, and then they get the sedative and he slowly stops and then he finally catches his breath and then it's, sedative. It's like I had forgotten they had said sedative as one of their guesses. So by the time he says it, the fact that you're running out of breath, but you still retain that these idiots, I'm gonna die, and these guys are guessing sedative. My favorite joke. Oh man, I love that.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.